your rooftop video in Kuala Lumpur. Like, my hands started sweating when I watched that video. And that's where you're up. I don't even know how high.
I guess around 100 meter or 300 feet.
Why? This one, you make a mistake, it is game over. And so, like, why do that one?
Eventually, I decided to do it. It was scary for me. Not everything is, but this one was. Planned out, got more comfortable with the situation, took a step over to the other side, and got ready to start. And as soon as I took the first step, everything felt super easy, like almost too easy. So I had to keep focused to keep my focus and not make any mistakes.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to My Social Life. I'm your host, Jacob Kelly. As always, today's podcast is powered by Surf. And this is the podcast where we teach you how to grow on social media by talking to people who have actually done it. People like Oliver Norden, who has over 1.7 million followers on TikTok and over 800,000 subscribers on YouTube. And I cannot be more excited to have you on the podcast today. Oliver, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, man. And where I want to start today, I want to get a little bit of a background on you. So who was Oliver before social media, before parkour? Where did you grow up? What did you think your career would be before kind of getting into what you're doing now?
Just like you, I have a background in hockey. It was my biggest passion for around 8 years, from when I was 6 to around 14. And I quit that for a few years, and I didn't really have a big passion in my life until I found parkour when I was 17. And ever since then, it has been my biggest passion.
Okay. And you, correct me if I'm wrong, you're from Sweden, right?
Yes, correct. But for the last year, I've lived in Portugal.
Portugal? Okay. So what led you to move to Portugal?
Lisbon is one of the world's best parkour cities, and that's the main reason I moved here.
Okay. And so you said you started parkour when you were 17. So that was about 2007, right?
Yes, correct.
And so what led to you starting parkour? Was there something a lot of your friends were doing, or like what led you to finally start? Did you see a video on YouTube? What's the story?
2007 is pretty early for parkour. So I first saw it in the newspaper. I didn't have any friends who trained parkour. I went out alone in the forests and learned by myself by trial and error. I went into the city, usually early in the weekend mornings, because I was quite shy. And that's how it started. And after around 2 years, I found other friends to train with.
And I heard somewhere early on, you got given the nickname Mr. Bale. Is that true?
That's correct. I got famous for failing a lot, and it became a nickname.
And so is bailing essentially where the move you're doing or the trick you're doing doesn't go how you thought it was going to go, right? Kind of like a crash in parkour, essentially.
Yes, that's correct.
And so what are some of the worst bails you've ever had? I know you made headlines a couple years ago when you crashed into an electricity box, I believe in Thailand. Like, is that your worst bail ever, or are there some worse ones than that?
That's one of the worst, yeah. So I was going for a dive roll to land on my back on a electric box, and I slipped in the takeoff and went too short, so I had to put my hands in the corner of the electric box, and they slipped, and I landed with my chest and pretty much kicked myself in the head. And my back hurt a lot, but nothing was broken, so that's one of the worst ones. I also broke my foot 3 years ago, and I had 2 concussions. But I do think it's possible to train parkour safely. I just like to push myself to the maximum.
And why do you like to push yourself to the maximum? Why don't you like to kind of stay within those bounds of safety?
It's always been something within me that wants to push limits and go beyond. I like going outside comfort.
Going full time as someone that does parkour, I'm assuming, isn't very easy. And I read somewhere, is it true that you'd played online poker and you made online poker your job that allowed you to kind of travel the world and do parkour?
Yeah, that's correct. Back in high school, I studied construction, and I did that for a living for 3 years. And I started, like, I really hated my job, and I started playing online poker on the side. After 2 years of doing that, I made the same amount of money from poker as on my regular job. So I could quit that, and I made poker my living for around 3 years. Until now, when I make a living from social media, YouTube, TikTok.
Is that a scary step? Even though with poker, you know, you make more than your job. Is that still a scary step? Because obviously, like with the job, it's like it's guaranteed income, versus poker, you have a bad game, you don't have that income coming in. Like, is that a scary step for you to make? Even though I did read an Instagram caption from a few years ago where you wrote, like, you quit your safe, boring job in 2012 to go do poker. So was that a scary step, or is it an exciting step?
It's both, but I would definitely say it's one of the most scary things in my life, because like you said, we leave something safe for something greater, and you have to step outside your comfort zone, take a risk. Even if it seems logical to take the step, you might feel judged by people around you. And people around me didn't think it would work out, but it worked out great.
I was going to ask what the reaction from the people around you was. And so when you finally do quit your job, I believe it was 2012 when you finally made that jump. Is that correct?
Yeah, sounds about right.
Where's the first place you go?
I traveled Asia every winter. So Thailand, Indonesia, those places.
Were you creating content the whole time? Because that was 2012 when you quit your job and you started traveling. From my understanding, like, I did some research here, it looks like you didn't really start to kind of go hard on YouTube and take YouTube really seriously until about 2019, right? It's like, what were you doing in those 7 years from 2012-ish to 2019 when you really started to focus on YouTube?
Yeah, so you're right. I uploaded around maybe 2 videos a year on YouTube back then. And it was a lot because of the videos took a long time to make. It could take months to make a videos because I only uploaded the best clips. So it was like highlight videos. And in 2019, I found new formats which worked better. It was much quicker to make. It was first person videos, so you can see the parkour world from my perspective. And it's much quicker to make those videos. I can make one video a week. And also they get much more popular because it creates more emotions for people.
Yeah, it's a very immersive experience. So where did you get that idea? Because I don't know if I'd seen that anywhere else. Like, did you see someone else doing it? Like, that's a cool idea. Or did you kind of have the idea on your own? What was the inspiration for that?
And there was definitely earlier viral videos before me. But around that time was when GoPro started to get big and when the quality of the videos got good enough to make these kind of videos.
So with that then, like, the growth of your channel when you start posting those videos was pretty quick, right? Like, I'm pretty sure you had less than 1,000 subs at the start of 2019. And it was just kind of a hockey stick growth curve kind of from that point, right? Like, those videos got picked up pretty quickly, and some of them have over 50 million views today, if I'm not mistaken. It's like, how fast did it all happen once you started posting this type of content?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. So after 10 years, I had under 1,000 subscribers. And I think within a year, I had reached over 100K. So they definitely popped off. I think one of the videos got, I think they got 10 million views and 20 million, the two first viral ones.
And then how many videos had you been posting before those two went viral?
I guess it was must have been 15 to 20, I would guess.
15 to 20. And so what's going through your mind then when these videos start to go viral and we're talking like mega views, especially compared to what you were doing before that? It's like, what's going through your mind when all of this is happening?
It was like a dream coming true for me. And I never thought it would be possible for something like that to happen. I remember it somewhere around 2010. One of my friends got 1 million views on a failed video on YouTube, and I thought it never would happen again for neither me nor one of my friends. So it was amazing when it happened.
is why do you think your those videos that did well? Like, you've been posting other content before, like you said, 15, 20 videos. What made the two that went viral different? What allowed them to take off and get some traction?
It's the combination of first person's perspective that creates a more immersive experience. And it's also up on height. So it creates emotions for people. They feel what I felt at the same time when I filmed it.
Absolutely. So like for just using that example, your rooftop video in Kuala Lumpur, like my hands started sweating when I watched that video. And that's where you're up. I don't even know how high, but you're kind of on the outside of the building.
I guess around 100 meter or 300 feet.
100 meters up. And it's like, why that? Like, that one is not like the one where like where your bail, where you hurt your back really badly because you made a mistake. This one, you make a mistake, it is game over. And so like, why do that one? Is that just like, I need to do something more extreme to keep the views coming? Like, why did you genuinely risk your life for a video?
So it was actually at the hotel I was staying at, and the first day I went there and saw it, I immediately knew that I wanted to do it. But my stay at the hotel expired and I didn't do it. But I stayed in the same town, Kuala Lumpur, for another 2 weeks, and I still wanted to do it. So I got into the building, went up, and I was quite scouted quite a bit more, and I planned out where exactly I wanted to take every step, so to avoid mistakes. And I repeated in my head for hundreds of times when I was at home at my hotel, and eventually I decided to do it. And this was scary for me. Not everything is, but this one was. And so I went there, planned out, got more comfortable with the situation, took a step over to the other side and got ready to start. And as soon as I took the first step, everything felt super easy, like almost too easy. So I had to keep my focus and not make any mistakes.
Because you didn't go all the way around the building, but you went a pretty far distance around the building. When you get all the way to that side and you jump back over the balcony, back onto more solid ground, is it relief? Is it excitement? Are you happy you did that? Are you just like thinking, why did I, that was crazy. Why did I do? Like, what happens when you complete that stunt?
I felt happiness and relief, but not full relief because I still needed to avoid security. So I got into the elevator and got down as fast as possible. And then I got fully relieved when I got away from the building.
And when you post that video also goes viral, right? So how do you follow up a video like that? Like, because you can't really get much more extreme than that stunt. So is there any concern that now that you've posted, like, how do I top this? What do I do? Like, how do you follow up a video like that?
Yeah, I guess that's a negative side. Like, people expect more of the same, and it's not possible for me to go out and risk my life every day. So I try to create new types of content, even though this type get most views. Usually I try to mix it up.
So you said 2019, you know, you're getting millions of views. You grow to over 100,000 subscribers in a year. What point do you stop doing the online poker and start just doing social media full time?
And there was actually a pause between that. I quit poker a bit earlier, around 2016, I guess, because different reasons, political reasons, and also the competition gets higher with more, like every play gets better, so there is more competition. And I did coaching of parkour for a few years mostly, and went over to social media in 2019.
So when you started going, posting a lot on YouTube, is when you decided that you have to make this your job?
Not have to, but it was my biggest passion. So, and I started getting views and money before I decided to go over. So after that happened, I made it my full-time career.
when you say you make your full-time your career, like, we don't have to get into specific numbers, but like, what's the breakdown of like, how are you making your money? Is it all based off of AdSense? Is there merchandise? Is there like virtual coaching? Like, what does it look like that allows you from social media to cover all the bills? What are all the different revenue streams?
It's a mix between AdSense on YouTube. A lot of music artists pay me to use their music on TikTok because so much of their music goes viral from TikTok today. And also I make content for brands to use on social media.
Okay, so they'll like send you their product and you'll do like your stunts and stuff with the product, and then they'll be able to have their product in a unique type of video?
Yeah, either to post on my own social media or to use on their.
And so how are these brands finding you? Like, are you reaching out to them? Are they reaching out to you? Like, what does that look like?
It's mostly from them contacting me, but I started more and more to contact brands as well. And I guess they find me mostly on TikTok.
So TikTok's been the biggest platform for you?
Yeah, because that's where I get most views.
Okay, so when did you get on TikTok then? Like, when was it? Did you get, because 2019 was around the time TikTok became a little bit more popular. So did you get on TikTok the same time you got on YouTube?
And I started late 2019. And like many others, I heard from Gary Vee. He kept talking more and more about it. So about how good it is to post on. And my friend Philip Benjaminson grew over 100,000 followers on TikTok quite early on in 2018. So I decided to try it and I grew 1 million followers in the first 8 months.
In the first eight, wow. And so how fast did your first video go viral on TikTok then?
And my first few videos got around 100,000 views, and after a couple of videos I got into some of them into millions.
How do you kind of split your time between YouTube and TikTok? Because you've also had some YouTube shorts that did really well. Like, I believe when YouTube shorts started, like January 2021 to about like probably March, April 2021, I'm pretty sure you grew like 300,000 subscribers in that period. And I'm pretty sure that would be pretty much directly attributed to YouTube shorts, right? So like, how do you kind of balance your time between all the different platforms and the type of content you should be creating? Because there's also Instagram in there as well. So like, how do you kind of split your time? What's the schedule?
Yeah, it goes a bit back and forth. What I think works best at the moment is how I decide. And for a while, I focus mostly on YouTube. But now I think audience has got a bit tired from some of the normal POV videos because a lot of people, especially in Asia, are starting to make similar content. So now you need to put in a lot of more work to get the same number of views. And at the same time, I get more and more views on TikTok. So that's where I put my main focus right now.
For the content on TikTok then, are you focusing when you're creating videos, you're walking through the stunts and everything, you're thinking with TikTok in mind? Or do you think of more like a longer form 3-minute video for YouTube and you're going to be able to cut that down for TikTok? Like, how does that creative process work?
Usually I go outside, look for funny, different ideas, mostly for TikTok. So I look for different things. If I look for a YouTube video or a TikTok video, if I look for a YouTube video, I need longer running lines that I can use for POV. And for TikTok, I try to find something crazy, different, something people haven't seen before.
So with TikTok then, like, how do you hook people? Because for a lot, you know, I've had people on and they talk about when you have to hook someone for your TikTok, you know, you're on screen being like, 3 ways to grow on YouTube. Like, and then that's how you hook them. Like, how do you hook people? Because if you're just kind of running right into a stunt, like, how do you capture people's attention the first 1 to 3 seconds?
Yeah, I agree. The first 3 seconds are really important. I try to evoke emotions. It can either be like fear from heights. It can be if I will fall down into water. It can be something funny. It can be something different, being upside down. Using some kind of object in a new way or throwing away something, people wonder what will happen.
Speaking of falling into the water, is that something that you've noticed that's different from TikTok to YouTube? Whereas like if you have a fail in a TikTok video, like that will go more viral than if you just posted a fail video on YouTube.
Like water works both on both, works great on both platforms. Like both height and water works both on TikTok and YouTube.
And how do you, what are your, like, how do you create consistently for TikTok? Like, is there a day a week you go out and you try to record as many videos as you possibly can? Is it you're just recording every day you're trying to film something new? Like, how do you create consistently for TikTok?
I write down a lot of ideas. Every idea I get, I write down in a, on a notepad, so I have hundreds of ideas written down. So I have more ideas than time to film them. And I go out around 5 days a week and looking for ideas.
So before you film a video, do you kind of have to walk through the entire plan and all the stunts before you do it?
Yeah, usually I plan in small steps and then put it together.
Can you put it together? And then are you recording? Do you have like a fancy camera? Or are you recording off of your phone?
I mostly use GoPros because they have good stabilization, slow-mo, and good quality.
Of course. And do you have somebody, because if you're traveling around often, you're in different cities all the time, do you have somebody that comes with you that helps you record, or in every city do you have to find somebody new to help film?
I meet up with local people in every city I go. That's what I've been doing in... for the last 10 years or so, but now I have a girlfriend who does a lot of that also, and she also trains parkour.
Oh, that's awesome. And before that, then, how did you find people? Was it finding them online and just DMing people and messaging? How did you find people to help you film?
Yeah, in the worst cases, if I didn't know anyone in the city, I search on Facebook for the city and parkour, or YouTube and parkour. But in most cases, if I go maybe to Singapore and I know parkour people there, usually they know parkour people in the next city I go to, so I can contact them from there.
Are there any little things you do in your videos that try to help either with the hook or with the retention, like trying to get people to watch the whole video that not everyone will realize you're doing in your videos, like any little tricks you're doing?
Try as much as possible to have camera movement all the time. I cut out all the boring parts, like before and after and even in the middle. Also, as I might speed up small parts very little, so people even can't notice.
Oh, okay. So just like little parts, like you'll speed it up enough that it goes by quicker, but not enough that people will notice. Like you're not triple speeding it, but maybe like 1.5. Exactly. So okay, that's interesting. I've never heard anybody do that before. And how often are you posting then?
And lately, it's been pretty much once a day.
Once a day. So what's the workflow look like? If you're going out every day and you're looking for things to record, you're recording every day. Are you also editing every day? So it's like you go out, you find something, you find a good place, you do it, you record it, you go back to wherever you're staying, the hotel, the Airbnb, you edit it, you post it. Or what's the process look like for you to get from once you're going out on like a Tuesday morning, you're going out to find somewhere to film, like from that point to hitting upload, what's that process?
Yeah. So far I do all of the editing myself. And go out to train, explore ideas daytime, and usually in the evenings I have time to edit. So it's a full time.
Absolutely. And so when you go out every day, are you, whatever you're posting, we'll say in the evening, you recorded earlier that day, or do you try to get ahead? Like, do you have a backlog of videos you can post, like if you miss a day, or are you creating every day and that video you're creating that day is the one that gets posted?
Usually I used to post the same day, but now when I have a lot of work for music artists, I need a backlog to deliver videos faster for them.
Okay, so you have the backlog for the artist. So whenever an artist reaches out to you, you have another video you could send them right away instead of having to go out and film something new?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and so how long have you been working with artists then? I guess that started once you got on TikTok?
Yeah, once you get over 100K, about that number, I would say you can work with artists and they are willing to pay to use their music on TikTok.
Okay. And are you editing your videos kind of to the beats of the music, or do they not really, they just want the song in the background? That's kind of their main priority.
It depends. In a lot of cases, I do time it to the music.
I'm curious now. So like you said, you do that because you have to work with artists, but you're still going out and creating every day. You're editing every day. How do you find time to take a break?
It's definitely a challenge. I am quite introvert, so I definitely need alone time, and I try to do my editing as fast as possible so I get some time to quiet down and get some rest. But also, work can be relaxing for me, and overall learning, reading, this kind of development is also rest for me. More rest than just watching a movie.
How long can you do parkour for? Can you do it until you're 60, 70 years old? Like, I'm curious, like, what the when you're thinking of regular professional athletes, like whether it be a soccer player, hockey player, like, their career kind of taps out around 33 to 40. How long can you do parkour for? Like, how long does this last, or do you have to kind of find something to do after? Is there like a retirement age for parkour?
I think I can continue to do kind of similar to what I do until I'm at least 40. But I guess I have to adapt a lot to my body, but I think there will always be movement to explore.
So once you do turn 40, what do you have a plan in mind, or are you kind of just taking it day by day right now?
Kind of take it day by day. I have a passion for creating videos. It's not just parkour, so I think I will continue after that age too.
And are you doing stuff where you're talking to the camera a lot, or for the most part, because if it's either like the POV videos, they don't see you, or if you're doing parkour, you're kind of a little bit further away. It's like, are you going to start doing more stuff where it's like people get to see your personality and you're talking to the camera and things like that?
I don't do much of that. I'm pretty camera shy, as you can see, but I'm thinking about starting a new TikTok channel just to practice talking for cameras.
Okay, well, I appreciate you, despite being camera shy and it's not being something you like to do, that you're taking the time to come on the podcast. I really appreciate that. So talking about this new TikTok account, are you going to try and grow the new account, or is it purely just to kind of give yourself the opportunity to practice?
At the start, I just want to have it to practice. But if it goes well, I might change my strategy.
So with the current account then, with your main account, your Oliver Dorton account on TikTok, how do you build a community then? You know, if you're not doing a lot of talking on camera, how do you kind of establish a connection with the people that watch your videos?
I think it creates connections if people get to know me, if they see my funny side and what I do in general.
And then, so are you doing spending time like replying to comments and things like that?
Quite a bit. Like, for a while, I reply to every single YouTube comment. I reply to a bunch of comments. Like, I normally read every comment on TikTok for the first few hours, but sometimes it's not possible.
I guess because sometimes if it goes too viral, there's too many comments coming in, right?
Like today, a video I posted today got 3 million views in the first few hours, and in that case, it's not possible.
What was that? I might have seen that video. What was it?
It was a fail video from 2 days ago where I jumped over a roof gap with 3-4 meters down and landed in a staircase.
Is that what the bandage on your arm is from?
Yes, this is what happened, but it went not too bad. I could continue training that day.
And what are the key metrics you look at on your TikTok? Are you, if you're trying to read all the comments, is that where you get a lot of your feedback from to see what people are liking, or do you pay attention to the analytics? Do you focus in on watch time, completion percentage? Like, what are the, when do you even spend time in analytics? Like, what do you use to review what's working and what's not?
I use mostly look on watch time.
Watch time's the main one. And what would your advice be to someone who's not getting a ton of views right now on TikTok?
Try a lot of different content and stick to what works best.
What's something you did wrong on TikTok when you started? What's a lesson that people can learn from you that they can kind of avoid making the similar mistake?
So for TikTok, a lot of the normal parkour videos, like, being good is not enough. You need to do something interesting. So for people outside your niche, so adapt it to the general audience.
And how are some ways, like, can you give an example of how you've done that or are trying to do that?
One way is including risk. One way, put in some stakes or some kind of storytelling into the video.
And now with risk, I'm going to bring back that Kuala Lumpur video. You know, there's a lot of risk there. How do you balance, you know, wanting to get views and in order to get a lot of views, requiring a lot of risk and your own personal safety and maybe not getting quite as many views? How do you kind of balance those things?
So I do most of my training on ground level. And for doing something on high level, I need to know that I can make it 1,000 times or 1,000 on ground level before I do it on.
And who are some people that you've seen that are doing a good job on TikTok? Some other creators maybe that you watch and think, oh yeah, they're doing a really good job.
Pasha the Boss is one. He's a parkour athlete, super creative, always brings in new ideas, new moves. Kedori is another parkour athlete. His videos perform well because he takes a lot of impact and big drops and stuff like this. That's two from top of mind.
How do you deal with fluctuating view counts on TikTok? You know, the views go up. You know, you might have your video today has had millions of views. You had a couple million views in the first couple of hours. Tomorrow you can post a video that gets 48,000 views, which is very normal for TikTok. How do you deal with that? Like from a mental health perspective, like how does that impact you? Does that get to you? How do you handle that?
It could definitely affect, but try as much as possible to focus on creating content and posting and learning from what works great, what doesn't work. Not as much on the views.
Are you ever stuck at the comparison trap? Like, are you ever looking at what other people are doing and how their views are going and comparing them to your own?
I think most of us do, and I don't think it's always healthy, so focus on what you can do, your own work.
Yeah, it's kind of staying in, like, keeping those blinders on, making sure you're focusing on yourself, not as much on other people, not as much in the views on creating great work.
Try to improve 1% a day.
1% a day, I like that a lot. And so how are you then? How are you improving 1% a day right now?
I'm reading a lot of books about, it could be psychology, stuff like that. I try to learn storytelling. I learn copywriting. I study other people on TikTok. I learn about what works, what doesn't work.
What are some books you'd recommend? Because I read somewhere, I think it was another interview you gave, that I see you like reading all kinds of stuff. Like you mentioned, you know, nonfiction, psychology, even economy, biographies, game theory, evolutionary biology. Why do you like to read those things? What are they giving you an advantage somehow? Like what's the intent behind reading them?
It's not for the videos themselves. I always loved learning, improving myself. So it's I love growing as a person.
When you're not doing parkour, what else are you doing? What else does Oliver like to do when he has a day off for once?
Quite analytical. Lately I've started learning chess, Wordle, reading overall. Watching other creators create content or learning from them.
And so what do you have coming up? What's exciting you right now? What's the thing you're working on right now that has you most excited?
I'm moving back to Sweden in 1 month, and I'm excited to explore Stockholm. I'm from Gothenburg, but this is my first time living in the capital of Sweden. So I'm excited to explore that area, create some new water challenges, jumps over water.
That's going to be exciting. I'd love to get to Sweden. It seems like a beautiful country.
It is, definitely.
And from my understanding, a lot of people speak English there too, right?
Yeah, pretty much everyone.
And then you got hockey there too. You know, you got the Elite League, which I mean, it seems like great. I'd love to get out there and visit Sweden at some point. It does seem gorgeous. And so how often then are you back in Sweden? Like, do you try to get back every year or just kind of what's that look like?
Yeah, usually in the summers, and I travel in the winters, but part of summer, I also travel within Europe.
Okay. So you like to kind of, I mean, it's pretty affordable to travel within Europe though, isn't it?
Yeah. It's definitely cheap transportation between the countries, and West part can be a bit expensive, but not too bad.
So what are some of, out of all the places you've been, what are some of the best parkour cities?
My all-time favorite is Lisbon, where I live, and that's where I moved here. Other than that, I would say Singapore and Kuala Lumpur also.
And what makes Lisbon your favorite? Why is it the best?
The city goes a lot up and down, and so they build a lot of staircases. And I would say more than half of the spots are built around staircases. They build not just a staircase, but a lot of walls around it. Also, there's a lot of international athletes moving here or traveling here, so it's a great community.
Beyond social media, is there other ways to make money with parkour? Like beyond, even like, I know you mentioned you were coaching for a little while. Is there like professional parkour in some aspects? Like, what are some other ways you can make money as a parkour athlete?
You could make money competing, but it's so many people are competing, so it's high competition. And also a lot of parkour people get into stunts, which I've done a bit of. That's some of the main.
Like stunts for movies and TV shows, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. It's, yeah, music videos and such.
Yeah. Is that something, do you enjoy doing that, or something you might not do quite as much?
I like that too.
That, and so like, how often do you look back then, you know, to that 17-year-old kid back in 2007 who was in the forest trying to do parkour alone, to where you are now? Millions of followers on social media. You're traveling the world to do parkour. You're being asked to do stunts in movies and music videos. You're making money from the thing you love to do. What would 17-year-old Oliver think of that?
I could never imagine that. It's like I'm living some kind of dream life when I look at it that way.
And how often do you look back on the whole journey then? From now all the way back to that kid that was starting parkour?
Not enough. You need to remind me more often.
For my last question, Oliver, I like to flip the script a little bit. So instead of me asking the question, it's you asking the question, but it's not to me. So pretend you have a crystal ball. And you can ask this crystal ball any question, you'll get the 100% honest answer. What is one question you want to know the answer to?
How will I die?
That you want to know that? You want to know the answer to that?
If I can avoid it.
You can avoid it. Fair enough. You want to lock? I mean, I saved the hardest question for last, so we're gonna go with that as your answer. You think?
Yeah.
Awesome, man. Well, I want to thank you so much, man, for taking the time to come on the podcast. I want to give you the floor. Where can the people find you? Plug anything and everything you got right now.
On Instagram and TikTok, it's Oliver Nordin 1. On YouTube, it's Oliver Nordin. And it's been a big pleasure for me to be on this show.
Oh, dude, I'm really appreciative that you took the time, that you're willing to come on the show, especially like you said, you know, you're not always the biggest fan of talking in front of the camera. So I really appreciate that you were willing to come on My Social Life. Is this your first podcast?
It's my second.
Second? I mean, still, that's still pretty early. So I really appreciate that, man. I'll make sure everything's linked in the show notes down below so people can find you as well. Your links to your TikTok, your Instagram and everything. But yeah, thank you once again, man, for taking time to come on the podcast. And I want to thank everybody for listening. Whether you listen the entire way through or you're only listening to bits and pieces, I really appreciate you for taking time to check this out. Do me a big favor, go and follow Oliver. I'll make sure everything's linked in the show notes down below so you can find it. And if you'd like to follow me, you can find me everywhere on social media at the Jacob Kelly. Feel free to come and say hello. My DMs are always open. As always, today's podcast is powered by Surf. Thank you once again for listening. We'll talk soon.